Renegade Health Radio.
Renegade Health Radio. This is Kevin Gianni with Frederick Patnaud. Hey, Fred.
Hey, Kevin. How are you doing today?
I'm always doing awesome. We have a guest today. How cool is this?
Yeah, our very first guest.
We are guest virgins.
Yes, well, if you put it that way. Our first guest today is also from Montreal, Canada.
Another French-Canadian.
Mm-hmm. You're outnumbered 2-1.
Oh, my gosh. You know, I love Canadians. They're my favorite people. And I truly believe that they are the second nicest people on the planet.
After Americans?
No, absolutely not. After the Kiwis, after New Zealanders. I've never met a New Zealander who had a bad bone or any sort of, I don't know, just nastiness in their body. I'm sure that there are, but
well, if you come to Montreal and you know some people might not be so nice to the Anglos. So there's a little bit of weird stuff going on here, but why don't we welcome our guest?
Let's do it, Nick.
All right. Nick, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine, especially now that you've told us that French Canadians are pretty cool. It makes me happy.
Fred, who's Nick?
Well, Nick is sort of an online sensation in the nutrition, fitness, alternative health world. Nick Pinot, by the way, your last name is Pinot.
Yeah.
Pronounced not Pinot, like probably many Americans say.
I have to admit, that's how I thought it was.
Yes. No, don't pronounce the L. You know, there's so many letters you're not supposed to pronounce.
Yeah, that's pretty complicated. French, so.
Anyway, Nick, you wrote a book called The Truth About Fat-Burning Foods, and it's been a bestseller pretty much online. A lot of people have promoted it. It's a downloadable product, but it's, I must say, one of the nicely laid out, most deeply researched product I ever came across.
Thanks.
So we wanted definitely to have you. I know you're really passionate about your health journalism, and we're going to talk about some great stuff. So we met in person, Nick and I, and also eventually we're going to promote Nick's product, and we want to help each other out because, there's definitely, we see things in the same light.
Did you guys meet at Hortons? What is it? Tom Hortons?
Tim Hortons?
Tim Hortons.
No. It was a raw food restaurant in Montreal, something more high-end than the Tim Hortons.
Listen to me. I'm like, Tom Hortons. I'm such an ignorant guy.
That's such a cliche, too.
I know. So, Nick, what is the truth about fat-burning foods? Let's get down to it.
So, yeah, first of all, I'm the author officially of Truth About Fat-Burning Foods, but I must say that we're two in this business because I'm working full-time with my fiancée, Jen, and she contributed to the book a lot. I mean, she's basically the co-author behind the scenes, if you will, and she's going to be the co-author on our next book, so that's coming up in next July. So anyway, long story short, we've been doing a lot of research on food choices, and I've been really passionate about nutrition myself, especially for about 8 to 10 years, just going through a lot of phases in my life, trying to gain mass and eating 5,000 calories per day at the height of 5'4". Can you imagine?
Oh, my gosh.
Anyway, a lot of dairy, a lot of whole wheat, everything I thought was healthy at the time. And my health wasn't so good. I was gaining a lot of weight, but mostly fat. So you can probably guess that. So anyway, then I watched some documentaries like most people do. One day they just come across something that just will change how they see food forever. And for me, it was Food Inc. and all these Food Matters and all these groundbreaking documentaries that I watched. And that just opened my mind like, hey, wait a minute. This is not what I thought was healthy for all those years. And how come what people or what marketers are telling me about margarine and about whole wheat is not the same thing that I'm now reading from all sorts of experts in the paleo realm, Chris Kresser, and all those guys. I started reading what they were saying. And there was a big disparity, I don't know that word, but anyway, a big difference between what they were saying and what the actual education is. So to me, it was very weird. And then I have both me and Jen have a communications background, so we just went full journalism mode and just started thinking about how we can just put this information in a nice layout and make it really simpler, because people don't have time to be to be a nutrition nerd like me and spend like 1,000 hours reading about agave syrup and trying to figure out if it's healthy or not. So we just tried to bring that to the table, and then eventually we connected with a lot of people that also do the same thing, that have fitness products and that just are trying to help people out, and they liked the product. And then 1 year later, we have we sold over 30,000 products right now. So it's pretty amazing. We have a huge following, and we're trying now to just provide more information and help people out, trying to give them information and actionable things they can do in their life to get healthy.
What's in the book that like works for people? I mean, obviously if people are buying it, there's something in there that really kind of, you know, gives them this like feeling that you're like, wow, you know, I just learned something that's amazing. Give me one thing
Yeah. I mean, one of the most fascinating things that people read about in the book, and that they're I can imagine their jaw just drop. And basically, it's about olive oil. So a lot of people know, okay, olive oil, obviously it's healthy. And there's no problem there. I just buy olive oil wherever I go at the supermarket, and everything will be fine. But the truth is that, for example, Tom Weller is the author of the book In Extra Virginity, and he's an investigative journalist, a little bit more with a more exciting life than me. He just went on a journey to bust the Italian mafia. And really, really look on how olive oil is made. And turns out, for example, in 2008, the Italian police ran something called Operation Golden Oil, and they arrested a bunch of people in Italy. And I mean, turns out that a lot of people are adulterating olive oil around the world. Italy, in Morocco, in all across the Mediterranean area. So anyway, on the counters, on the supermarket shelves, what you find is usually an adulterated product. And that's really surprising to a lot of people. And what that means is basically you're buying extra virgin olive oil, but it can contain canola oil or corn oil or even soybean oil and GMO stuff in there. So that's a freaking scam that most people are really, really angry at that. And I mean, in the end, it's just I think anything that people can make money off, there will be some people trying to make the quick buck, and that's just one example. I mean, it's just like selling drugs. They sell fake olive oil, and that's really, I mean, it sounds like a movie, but it's really the reality.
It what should we do, Nick, to avoid, I mean, that kind of bad stuff and get the good olive oil?
Yeah,
do you have some quick tips?
Yeah, sure, definitely. So it's really hard to tell you. There's a couple of brands, for example, that the UC Davis, that's an olive oil center that does a sensory test and a lab testing in California. So they found out, for example, that the Kirkland Organic from Costco is one of the best quality olive oil you can find on a large scale. So that's very surprising to a lot of people, but sure. I personally know that Costco has really high quality standards. So that's something, if people have a Costco around, just buy the organic Costco olive oil. It's probably one of the best you can find. And something to look at, of course, is where it actually comes from. And if you buy it in a small specialty store, for example, chances are it will be higher quality, and you can actually ask the clerk where it comes from. Usually it's a private import, something like that. And another good sign, for example, if you have a dark glass obviously means that people who produce the olive oil understand that olive oil is not friends with any kind of light, because it will oxidize and it will lose its properties. At the same time, one last thing is the harvest date. if an olive oil doesn't have any harvest date, that's usually a bad sign, because olive oil, once it has been bottled, it has a shelf life of about 2 years. So, I mean, it has to be fresh. And if you buy old olive oil or random olive oil, chances are that you're not getting really what you're paying for. Hmm.
That's intense. I never knew that about the Italian olive oil. Makes me just want to buy California olive oil.
Yeah, actually, I mean, in the U.S., it's just another reason to buy local. And at least, I mean, I don't know of any states that will produce olive oil except from California, but it's still encouraging inside the country. It's still, instead of just getting it shipped from the other side of the world, it's just logical. But yeah.
What are some other things that that we should be concerned about, things that might be not what they seem?
Oh, there's a lot. One thing, for example, people jump on stevia these days, right? So they're trying to reduce their sugar intake for many good reasons. They know it's not healthy for any part of their bodies, especially in the quantities that people are eating it these days, about 130 pounds a year. But anyway, even if you consume just a lot of people, for example, they will start putting some stevia in their coffee or tea instead of sugar, which is it's a good step to better health. But anyway, these two brands, for example, Purevia, which is, I think is it Pepsi or Coca-Cola? But anyway, one of these big companies has that. Purevia and Stevia and the Raw, both of these brands sell small packets of stevia. So it's written stevia all over it, 100% pure or whatever, and it's written zero calories. But you just look at the ingredient list on the actual box, and it's 99% dextrose. So, I mean, it's kind of nonsense that they can advertise their product as being sugar-free when it's 99% sugar. it's really ridiculous. It's because the FDA, if you have something under a certain amount of calories, you can declare it's zero calories. And they don't have to say, they can say it's stevia even though it's like, it's not stevia at all. So, I mean, if people consume a lot of these packets, thinking that they're reducing their sugar intake, they're really not. So I think to me that's the real example of a food scam, and that's really sad that companies get away with these, because consumers don't have time to do the research and to worry about all those things, because life is just worrying enough as it is. I mean, people are still worrying about like pesticides and everything in their food, and then they have to worry about stevia. I mean, it's a pretty hard thing to understand.
Well, this is the same technique they use for the fat free sprays, the oil sprays that you spray on the pan. I think if you have less than 0.5 grams per serving of fat, then you can label it fat free on the front. I mean, it's total idiocy. I mean, it just makes no sense to me. It's like how on earth, like, who is the moron up in one of those agencies who just decided one day that actually made sense?
Exactly. I mean, the zero trans fat trend is the same thing. In, for example, in like some peanut butters, you can have trans fat in there in really small quantities. But I've read something on Science Daily, and researchers are really, people think, for example, oh, trans fats are being banned now, or at least the FDA has proposed a ban. Everything will be okay. But as we speak, it's not banned, and some people are consuming a lot of these zero trans fat products without knowing that they're getting 0.4 gram here and 1 gram here. And just, I mean, the studies have proven that just a couple of grams a day is enough to like multiply your chances of heart disease. I mean, it's crazy. It's crazy that they're allowed to just put one gram or like a milligram of trans fat in there, if we know that it's one of the most dangerous food ingredients there is.
Crazy. And isn't it in the PAM spray, you have to do half a second to get zero calories?
That's true.
Yeah, something like that. I think it's a millisecond.
Now, you also had something else which is related maybe more to what people in the paleo crowd are eating, like, for example, grass-fed beef, seeking grass-fed beef,
sure,
or free-range eggs. And it's quite popular, and obviously grass-fed is better, but what's the truth there about you know, the animal foods and whether they're truly what they're claiming to be?
Yeah, exactly. That's one problem. I mean, The problem arises in our society when something becomes popular. So, for example, these days you have gluten-free, everything is gluten-free, and now you've got some foods that were never contained gluten, and now they're labeled gluten-free. And that, to me, that's unacceptable. But anyway, when it comes to grass-fed beef, so grass-fed beef is really popular. At the same time, the term grass-fed is really loosely regulated. So that means basically you're just feeding your beef with grains, and let's say you want to make the quick buck, you label it as grass-fed, and you can sell it at a grocery store, no problem. But the USDA, the only thing they tell you, if you want, you can pay more and get this official labeling called USDA grass-fed. But why would you pay that if you're into fraud anyway? So, I mean, there's fraud. For example, there's some people that just will raise their cattle with grass, and then they will finish it with grains. And we know that the last 30 to 90 days of feeding are really crucial when it comes to the fatty profile. So people who are trying to get grass-fed, for example, to get all the benefits from the CLA and the right fats in there, they don't want any of these omega-6s fats that come from all those grains. Well, they're still buying their grass-fed beef thinking that they're not getting any of those, but they're still getting it, and they're still paying the full price. So the best thing when it comes to beef and a lot of these products, even eggs and all this, for example, free range or pastured eggs, they're not regulated. It's up to the farmer or the company to label their products. And to me, that's just nonsense. So anyway, what you need to do really is to go back to the old days when we used to know where our food was grown, we knew the farmer personally, and we just shook hands with people. And I mean, it might be hard for a lot of people, but you can rely on for example, on your butcher. If you're in a large city, for example, here in Montreal, we have this Italian guy, classic Italian guy, that's like, "Hey, my friend, come over, I'll show you my meat." And like, yeah, this guy will tell me this beef comes from locally this farmer, and he's passionate about food. So you need to go back to people who actually know what they're talking about, and they're passionate, and they want to offer that quality. Then you know it's grass-fed. Or I mean, the best thing you can do, and it's really a good experience for anyone who hasn't seen a farm, because a lot of people live these days and they don't want to go on a farm because it's dirty, right? But anyway, you just go there and you see, okay, the beef is eating grass, and I'm going to eat the beef who's eating grass. So it's right. It's the right thing. And oh, guess what? These guys also sell fruits and veggies, and there's no pesticides on them. So there's a lot of benefits from knowing people who grow your food. I think it's the best. It's really the best thing to do to improve the quality of your food.
I think what Nick said about going to a butcher is a fantastic idea. If you can't have access to a farm, I mean, ask them about grass-fed. Ask them about grass-fed, grass-finished, which means that, you know, this is grass throughout the entire life of the cow. And I actually went to our butcher shop is about two blocks from us. And I went to the butcher shop and I took a class, a lamb butchering class, something like an ex-vegan, you know, I still kind of am wrapping my head around it, but just because there's still that, like, you know, that kind of vegan ingrained in me. Yeah. But it was really interesting to be there with the butcher, you know, a guy who's, you know, kind of our age, started this shop after learning from Alice Waters, who's like the grandmother of local farm to table food. And it was just so cool to be there and just experience, the actual process of doing this, you know. And again, it may make some people queasy. Some people may think that you know, I've jumped ship and you know, they'll never listen to me or Fred or the podcast again. But man, I think you need to be in touch with that if you're going to be a part of it.
Yeah, I mean, especially the vegan argument that we should not kill any animals. I mean, I respect that if people want to believe that. For me, I think, eating a lot of meat as people are doing it in the United States and all around the world right now it's terrible. It's terrible. And we've gone way too far on the large scale feeding operations and everything. But if you want humanely raised beef and animals, you just have to go see the farmer, I think. Just on a personal standpoint, you have to know that these people care, because, I mean, even the butcher can tell you, oh, yeah, this is humanly raised beef, but maybe he doesn't even know. So, I mean, in the end, you just have to have confidence in people who are raising your animals. If you have that, and I think most people need to have that respect for animals, and even for, I mean, it's animals, but it's plant too. If you have like, oh yes, it's an organic farm, but you hear that they're killing the soils, so in 30 years from now, there will be nothing that can grow over there. That's bad. So you need to know that people have sustainability in mind when they grow food.
Now, one topic you had brought up, Nick, was also about the nutritional qualities of fruits and vegetables.
Yeah.
How nutritious they are, how many vitamins and minerals, what's the profile right now compared to the past? Is it true that what we tend to think that produce is less nutritious now than it used to be?
Yeah, it's mostly true. I mean, there's a couple of studies. Again, these studies are, it's hard to tell, for example, where the fruits and veggies came from, where they performed the studies. But overall, a couple of studies find just a reduction overall in some nutrients in fruits, veggies, all across the United States and all across, I mean, it's pretty logical, all across the world. In big farming operations. And it's just a sign that the soils are depleted. It's nothing more than that. But yes, I mean, some studies have proved it. And it's something to keep in mind as we go forward in the future. So that's just another reason that small farms and local agriculture, and even having your backyard your own backyard operation with some fruits, veggies, herbs is pretty smart. It's because, so nutrition comes from the soil. For example, you've got certain nutrients. If your soil is high in selenium, for example, then your beef is going to be high in selenium, and your plants are going to be high in selenium if that's a kind of nutrient they use in the soil. On the other hand, they found across Canada, for example, selenium is really scarce, and so are certain other nutrients. Just because, I mean, over time, when you farm over and over and over again for decades, it just reduces the nutrient content in the soil. So yeah, it's just another reason to find farming practices that keep sustainability in mind, and that maybe use rotational agriculture or permaculture. There's a lot of stuff going on that's really interesting, and you have to actually worry about that yourself, because eventually it's gonna reflect in the nutrient content of foods you buy. So, I mean, if you want, yeah, organic foods, you pay more, but is it organic foods from, I don't know, Bolt House or these big, huge companies owned by General Mills and all these multinational who might have huge farms, so like 35 acres of tomatoes? Or is that a small farmer that has a really good quality soil and that just has, probably more nutritious in the small farm, at least in the long run.
And you know, that organic certification, the USDA organic certification, I mean, I don't trust this thing as far as I can throw myself. It really is one of these situations. We did some research for our skincare company, and just looking at, you know, where, so you pay money to certify your products organic, non-GMO, no pesticides. And then the USDA out the back door, the top four of the top four grants that they give, the companies that they give grants to, the list goes, I don't even know what order, but it goes Cargill, Conagra, and ADM, Archer Daniels, Midland. And these are companies that are promoting and supporting GMO, the use of pesticides, developing genetically modified plants. I mean, it's disgusting. Why would anyone want to give money to that organization?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I mean, organic is one of those things these days. Yes, there, for example, the EWG environmental work group the clean 15 fruits and veggies you should eat, non-organic, that's pretty fair. The dirty dozen that you should probably eat organic, but I see a lot of people going all organic. And to be honest, I think especially because they're buying like organic processed foods and organic nonsense, they're really throwing their money, flushing their money down the toilet because they should be eating. Instead, they should be taking that budget and just going to a small farm and buying in bulk from these small guys who are actually, their business is dying right now because they don't have the supply, they don't have the marketing, they don't know how to sell their stuff. So they're just old school farmers who just want to meet you and to sell you cheap produce and cheap meat of very high quality. So yeah, I think local and humanly raised and everything is way more important than organic.
Well, this has been great, Nick. If anyone out there wants to know more about what Nick is doing, and why would you not? This has been pretty valuable. I'm excited to hear this information. I didn't know anything about the olive oil. I'm going to go home. We usually get local California olive oil, but every once in a while we get some of these other ones. And if we're traveling and we can't find a store, we'll buy an Italian one. So I'm a little bit concerned about what I've eaten in the past, particularly since I don't really prefer canola oil. And I'm sure that many of you don't either. But if you want to find out more about Nick, you can go to renegadehealth.com/truth about food. That is renegadehealth.com/truth about food. Hey, Nick, thanks for coming on.
Thanks, guys. It was very, very cool to be sharing this information with you guys. And I'll hopefully be able to come back and talk with you. It's always a pleasure.
No, sure. And Fred, make sure you get more French Canadians, man. This is great.
The best accent.
Yeah, but then eventually, I mean, the show might be in French, so.
Oh, then I'm out.
Then you're out, Kevin.
Every pause. Fred, can you interpret that for me?
Thank you, Nick. Merci.
Bye-bye.
All right, guys. Anyone who's listening, please make sure you leave a review for us if you liked Nick or if you liked Fred or if you liked me. I'm the serious one. Fred's the funny one. Please leave a review on iTunes. That was just a joke there, the funny and serious. I don't know, Fred, we had a comment about that, right?
No, the comment was that had a dry and sarcastic humor and you were serious and logical. But I don't know. I think you're the funny one and I'm kind of the angry one. I don't know exactly. Depends
anyway,
on the week, Fred.
Renegade Health Radio. Later.
Renegade Health Radio.